Morning. Today's daf is daf Mem Ches in Shabbos. We begin the fourth parak of Shabbos. Fourth parak of Shabbos is going to sound very similar to the beginning of the third parak of Shabbos. The Mishnah's opening question is, "Bame tomnin uvama ein tomnin." What can I insulate with and what can I not insulate with? If you remember way back when, we started the third parak of Shabbos. Go back to the second parak of Shabbos. So the second parak of Shabbos, "Bame malikin uvama ein malikin." What can I do halakha with and what can I not do halakha with? So you see the style of the Mishnayos are essentially the same. The topic is different. What are we talking about here in the fourth parak of Shabbos? Hatmana, insulation. Now we've already covered this topic before, but now this parak covers it officially and formally. Now the object of Hatmana is that I want to insulate the food and preserve its heat. Now there are basically going to be two types of Hatmana. There's Hatmana b'davar hamosif hevel, and Hatmana b'davar shein hamosif hevel. Again, these are things, ideas and concepts that we've gone through in the past. But here we discuss it now formally. So Hatmana b'davar hamosif hevel. Let's start with the first one. Insulating with something that adds heat. So what's the halacha over there? There, you can't insulate with something that's going to add heat, neither on Shabbos or before Shabbos as well. Meaning there's a gzera d'rabbanan, rabbinic decree, that you're not allowed to use any type of material that's going to add heat to the food. And the reason is very simple, shemichat begachalim, because what you may end up doing is you may end up doing chitui, meaning it's coals, they're hot coals. And if I insulate with something that adds heat, so eventually what's going to happen is that the coals are dimming, and I'm going to poke around and play with the coals. This is very similar to what we described earlier in the third paragraph when we talked about the gzer derabbanan of shihiyah. Exactly. And then there's another hatmana, which is hatmana b'davar shein hamosif hevel, doing hatmana which doesn't add heat, but just simply preservation of heat, meaning the food's already cooked to a certain point in time. I don't want to add any heat to the food. I just want to keep the food warm. Okay. So that is hatmana b'davar shein hamosif hevel, and that is mutter on Erev Shabbos, but usur on Shabbos itself. Mutter on Erev Shabbos because you're not doing anything. You're not even cooking. All you're doing is just preserving. On Shabbos itself, why should it be prohibited? I'm not doing any cooking. I'm just preserving the heat. So once again, this is another gzera d'rabbanan. And this gzera d'rabbanan is enacted because if I go and I try to preserve the heat in the food on Shabbos, so that basically means I'm going to be doing an analysis of the food, right? Because I'm going to first take a look at the food. Hey, what's going on over here with this food? And I'm going to be looking at the food and seeing, now this food may not be cooked to my liking. And so what you may end up doing is cooking the food on Shabbos if the food does not come out as cooked as well as you want it to. And the only reason why all this started is because I got involved in Hatmana, because I was involved in insulation, even though the insulation was just to preserve the heat. Okay, so there really are two separate gzeres. One gzera d'rabbanan of Hatmana b'davar hamosif hevel, which you're not allowed to do neither on Shabbos or before Shabbos. And then there's Hatmana b'davar. Right, that's Hatmana b'davar hamosif hevel. And then there's Hatmana b'davar shein hamosif hevel, where there I can do that on Erev Shabbos, but I cannot do that on Shabbos itself. Okay, that's basically it. Okay, we're done. Okay, we can all go home. Okay, now, we have Mishnayos to do. Mishnayos and Gemaras to do. We start off with the first Mishnah, Bame tomnin v'ma in tomnin. Okay, and Rashi explains. Take a look at the first Rashi on the Mishnah. Habala sala kedera mi al gabi kira ulatomna b'davar acher. So the food's on the pot. The food's on the fire going into Shabbos. Meaning Rashi's giving a story behind the Mishnah, and the story is a very simple story. It's Friday afternoon, and the food's cooked, and now you're removing it from the fire, and now what do you want to do? Is you want to preserve the heat ulatomna b'davar acher. The Amr Chachamim and Rashi now quotes, and this is a Gemara that we saw earlier. Ein tomnin b'davar hamosif hevel. That if I want to insulate the food, I can't do it with something that's going to add heat. Ela b'davar hamamid hevel. The only thing I could do is just insulate in something that preserves the heat. Mihu hamosif v'aser. And so now our question is a very simple question. On Friday afternoon, going into Shabbos, we want to know what materials add heat, and as opposed to what materials just simply preserve heat. And that's it. And so, much like the Mishnayos in the second parak, now we're just going to be identifying. But our purposes of identification is, what is the material that adds versus what's the material that simply preserves? So, ein tomnin. So here are things that you cannot do hatmana with, because they add heat. lo begefes, not with gefes. Now gefes is the residue of the olive press, right? After squeezing my olives, so the oil that comes out is oil that obviously is, you know, it puts it in its own container, and then what I have left is residue. Now gefes, we talked about in the third parak. Gefes, as we mentioned, is an excellent fuel, meaning that the residue of the olives really have a fantastic ability to retain heat, to exhaust heat. So therefore, this gefes is something which adds heat. Lo bezevel, not allowed to use fertilizer. I can't imagine that at the dinner table, you want to explain to everybody what you use to preserve the food. But it's, again, it's excellent, and it makes excellent fuel. Lo bemelech, not with salt. Velo besid, not with limestone. Velo bechol, not with sand. Beilachem and yaveshim. Now, these materials are so good at generating heat, so they are going to be usur to insulate the food on Erev Shabbos, whether they're moist or whether they're dry. Meaning, in either one of those conditions, they're going to generate heat, and therefore it's hatmana b'davar amosif hevel, and it will be usur. Then the Mishnah gives a list of four other items: straw, skins of the grape, muchin is anything soft, right? Rashi says cotton is an example, tufts of wool, anything soft, and grass. But these things only generate heat b'zman shein lachin, only when they're wet. But when they're dry, they don't generate any type of internal heat, and so therefore you could do hatmana with these items once these last items are dried out. Okay? So says the Mishnah. Okay. And so basically now we have embarked on the discussion of hatmana. The Gemara starts off with a very detail-oriented question. Now, we talked about the olive press. Now, after pressing the olive, so you have these residue olives. Whatever's left over in the bottom of the press, and these items generate a tremendous amount of heat. So, and the Mishnah says that you cannot do hatmana with these items on Shabbos. What about the sesame seed press? Meaning, you know sesame seed oil? So again, it's the same story. So you take the sesame seeds, you put them on the press, you squeeze out, you express the oil, and now what you're left with is just simply, pulp. Sesame seed pulp. So, do these have the same status as the olives? So the Gemara says, that's the question. So, now, the assumption going into this question, and I'm just simply taking the Gemara at its word, I did not do any type of research myself, but is that the olives create more heat than the sesame seeds. So is the Mishnah just saying olive oil or not olive oil? The olive pulp as opposed to sesame seed pulp, or really are the two the same? So Tashman Damar Rav Zera Mishum Chad Debe Rabbi Yanai Kupa Shetaman Ba Aser Lahanicha Al Gefes Shel Zesim. So we have a statement made by Rabbi Yanai. You have a kupa. You have some sort of pot where I did hatmana, so I cannot put it on top of gefes. Now keep this in mind. This is interesting. Here I didn't insulate the food entirely in the grape. In the olive pulp. Meaning what I did is I wrapped it up in something else. Let's just say towels for the purposes of illustration. I wrapped it up in towels and I put it on top of olive pulp. So there, he says, that's aser. Now, this is interesting and this really plays a lot of basic halachic ramification. Meaning that when we talk about hatmana, I didn't give a working definition of hatmana when we started the Mishnah. Right? In other words, let's ask a really simple question. What is hatmana? Meaning, when we say insulate the food, what does that mean? So the simplest explanation of hatmana means is that I'm taking this material and I'm enveloping it around the totality of the food. Now, when we talk about food, I mean, we can talk about the actual food itself, although hard to imagine, nearly impossible to imagine that I'm going to take actual food and put it into zevel. Okay, that would be gross. Probably more to the point, however, is that you're taking the pot of food and you're putting that, I mean, that's pretty much what all these examples are going to be using. You're taking a pot of food and you're putting the pot of food and you're enveloping it in these materials. So in other words, so I have the olive pulp, I have a pot, I basically now have the floor I'm going to line with olive pulp, I put the pot in, I take the olive pulp, I put it on the side, and even furthermore, I then take more olive pulp and I put it on the top. So in other words, it's a full insulation and full envelopment of the pot within the material that we're describing. That would be the simple explanation of Atmana. But now we can actually go even one step further. And that one step further would be the following. Meaning it would also be Hatmana, B'davar HaMosif Hevel, if let's say I wrapped up the pot in, let's say, not olive pulp, but I wrapped up the pot in a towel, and I put the towel on the pot on top of a heat source. That would also be Hatmana B'davar HaMosif Hevel. In fact, that's essentially what the Gemara just described. The Gemara says, I'm going to read this again. Amar Rav Zera Mishum Chad Debe Rav Yanai, Kupa Shetam and Ba. So I wrapped up the pot, or the barrel, the pot, whatever this is. Asu lahanicha akefesh lozesim. And here all I did is then I took this wrapped up pot and I put it on top of gefesh lozesim. Right? So comes out now that the only real heat source is coming from the bottom, but the pot is wrapped up all over, and so therefore this is Hatmana B'davar HaMosif Hevel. So you see, so it doesn't have to be that the material itself is used throughout the entire pot, bottom, sides, and top. It's enough if it's wrapped up and the heating element is on one side. Now, if you're following me and you really understand what I'm saying, it would come out now that on Shabbos, on Erev Shabbos, if I wrap up my pot and put it on top of the blech, that would be a problem. That would be Hatmana. And not just Hatmana, but Hatmana B'davar HaMosif Hevel. Right?
But is blech exactly the same thing?
Right, correct. In other words, I'm assuming that the blech is a heat source. It's not an absurd assumption. And again, I'm not giving you halach lamasa. That's not my job, but I'm just saying, but it would come out now that would also be a form of Hatmana, Hatmana B'davar HaMosif Hevel, based on what the Gemara is saying over here. Yeah, the crock pot was become the popular discussion recently in terms of that, because there, the heat source seems to be going all around. The heat source is not on the top, so maybe can somehow get spared from Hatmana because of that. They're looking at Gefet as a heat source.
As a heat source.
Yes. Yeah. In other words, it must be. I mean, I'm not sure if I made this point clear, but it must be that it was fueled, it was ignited. In other words, it by itself as an organic material, I don't want to imagine as being a heat source, it must be that it must have been ignited. I mean, but it's no different than coals. I mean, the same thing is true by coals. You know, coal by itself is nothing, but if it was ignited, so now it's not only hot, but it's going to be a source of heat as well. So So the Gemara says like this. We're on the bottom now of Mem Zayin Amud Beis. Look, maybe there really is no basic difference between sesame seed pulp and olive pulp. Meaning they're both Hatmana B'davar HaMosif Hevel, and I cannot use either material to insulate the pot. But we could make a fine distinction between the two. L'inyan asuke havla dezeisim maske havla deshumshamim lo maske havla. But in terms of now heat coming off, meaning heat rising, right? The word asuke means to rise. Good asuk. In terms of heat rising, so maybe we could suggest that with the olives and the olive pulp that was heated up, there it's so hot the heat rises. So like the scenario that I painted just a moment ago, where basically the olive pulp is on the bottom. The pot is wrapped up in a towel. The pot is put on top of the olive pulp. That's going to be Hatmana B'davar HaMosif Hevel. That would be Asur. If I were to do the same thing with Shumshamin, maybe I wouldn't arrive at the same conclusion. Maybe if the sesame seed pulp is on the bottom, and I wrap up the pot and I put on top of the sesame seed pulp, maybe then I won't make the argument that the sesame seed heat, the heat that's generated is rising up. But in terms of the basic halach of Hatmana, they're basically the same. Meaning I cannot insulate with olive pulp, with the pulp of the olive, and I cannot insulate with the pulp of the sesame seed as well. Okay. Now, the Gemara is continuing, obviously we're going to go on in the Gemara, but just mind you, that now it seems to me like we're switching gears a little bit in the Gemara. We're not, in other words, even though this parak is dedicated to the topic of Hatmana, and that's generally speaking what we're going to be speaking about, these next stories that come up in the Gemara have more to do with just cooking on Shabbos or the gzeiras associated with cooking on Shabbos and less to do with Hatmana. You'll see what I mean. Let's See the Gemara, Rabbi Rav Zera equal Abay Resh Kalusa. The story goes with two Amorayim, Rabbi and Rav Zera going to the house of Resh Kalusa. Chazil Ahu Avda, the Anachkuza Damaya Apuma de Kumkama. So there was a kettle. And the kettle, let's say the kettle was on the fire. Okay. And you brought over a little jug, and the jug was filled with water. And the water in the jug was cold, and what this attendant did, he's Jewish, what this attendant did is that he took the cold water jug and he put it over the mouth of the kettle, and with the intent of simply warming up the water in the jug. Okay? So in other words, to cook obviously on Shabbos, that's prohibited. That's a malacha. That's not what he wanted to do. All he wanted to do was just simply remove the chill off the water in the jug. So what he did is he put it over the mouth of the kettle that's on the fire on Shabbos. So Nazye Rabba. When Rabba sees this, so Rabba says to the attendant, "Do not do that." Right? He reprimanded him. So Amalei Rabbi Zera. So Rabbi Zera says to Rabba, "I don't understand. Why did you reprimand him? Maishna mimecha magabe mecham. How is this any different than one pot on top of another pot? Do we know what Rabbi Zera is referencing? No, we don't, because we didn't see this yet inside in the Gemara." Rashi points out this is coming up now at the end of our parak, end of the fourth parak. Fourth parak is not really that long. End of the fourth paragraph, we're going to be learning about Mechem Agabe Mechem. And as Rashi points out, what we'll be learning about Mechem Agabe Mechem, that it's okay on Shabbos to take one pot of food and put it on top of another pot of food on Shabbos simply because you want to warm up the pot on top of it, that's fine on Shabbos. So how is this any different? So Amalei Hasamukume Kamukim, Hachilu de Kamoli. So the Gemara says, what do you mean, what's the difference? The difference is very simple. There, when I put one pot of food on top of another pot of food, I'm just simply interested in preserving the heat, meaning the pot on top is already cooked, the pot on top is already hot, all I want to do is just simply preserve the heat. But this is not hadmana though, in other words, there's no wrapping, there's no insulation, all I'm doing is just preserving the heat. Over here in this case, the water is cold. And because the water is cold, so now what are you doing? There's a chance now that you're warming up the water, and there's even more of a chance that the water is going to get cooked. So, fine. So, in other words, so that's the difference between the case of putting cold water on top of a pot versus putting cooked food on top of the pot. There is a long discussion in Tosfos over here. Maishnam imecham agabe mecham. In terms of what kind of heat are we talking about when you're putting one pot on top of another pot? Is it yatzel esbo? Is it not yatzel esbo? And consequently, what would be okay, if anything at all, to put cold water on top of hot water? I strongly encourage, please take a look at Tosos, where Tosos has a discussion of what kind of heat are we talking about. Going back to the Gemara, Amalei Rabbi Zera, Maishnami, next story. So, Hadachazi de Paris de Studa, Apume, de Kuva, Va'anach, Natla, Ilave. Now, the attendant went on to do the following. He took his Sudar, right, his head wrapping, right, the scarf, whatever it is, and he put it on the mouth of the jug, and then he put a spoon on top of this scarf. Okay, Rashi describes that this was a common practice. Right,
insulation.
Yeah, it's right. It's kind of like an insulation. All right. So Nazir Rabban, again, Rabban reprimanded him. So Amalei Rabbi Zera Amai. So Amalei Hashta Chazis. So Rabban says to Rabbi Zera, "Here, look, I don't even have to explain anything to you. Watch. Watch what's going to happen now." So Lesof Chazit Dekamitzarle. I'm sorry, Dekamatzarle. Now this attendant who put his scarf on the pot of food, it wasn't food, it was a liquid, and then he put a spoon on top of the scarf. So what did the spoon do? It kind of submerged the scarf into the liquid. And now he took the scarf out of the liquid, and he wrung out the scarf on Shabbos. So Amalei Maishna Miparvanka. So he says, okay, I hear you, I understand that. That's called Schita, that's wringing something out on Shabbos. You're not allowed to do that. Or maybe it's even Libun. Right? That's another good call. So anyways, but you know, what about Parvanka? So now, what parvanka is, Rashi says it's some sort of sleeve. Right? Rashi describes Beged HaAsur Lifros Al Hagigish Shepursanos HaBeShabbos. So they have a barrel, and they put the barrel in some sort of sleeve on Shabbos. And apparently that's mutter, that's fine. So how is that any different? So the Gemara's answer is Amalei Hasam Lo Kapayit Alavei Hachik Kapayit Alavei. So he says really it's an issue of Hakpada, meaning the attendant doesn't want his scarf wet. So therefore, when the scarf gets wet, he's going to squeeze it out. This sleeve that's used, this parvanka, not really sure how to describe it, simply because I myself don't know exactly what it is, but people are mockbit about it, meaning people don't care. If it gets wet, so what? It gets wet, that's fine. And you're not going to end up squeezing it on Shabbos. Okay. Very good. Okay, so essentially now we started the fourth parak of Shabbos. We talked about the generalities of Hatmana. Before Shabbos, you cannot do Hatmana B'davar HaMosif Hevel. Including that is the residue of the olive. The Gemara wants to know, does it also include the residue of seeds, sesame seeds as well? To that, the Gemara basically said, yes, it's also included as well. A fine distinction between the pulp of olives and the pulp of sesame seeds, but essentially they're the same in terms of the Isser of Hatmana. And then the Gemara digressed for a moment, telling two stories about what the attendant did wrong, taking cold water and putting it on top of the kettle on Shabbos, and wringing out his scarf on Shabbos. Gemara now, V'lobetavin, the Gemara now is going to continue the discussion of the Mishnah with straw. Okay, we go back to Muksa. Now, I know we spent a lot of time discussing Muksa these past number of days, and we're back. And it's an oddity, because I'm doing Hatmana basically with raw materials, right? Now, my Hatmana with raw materials, these raw materials, again, if it adds heat, it's asur. If it just preserves heat, so then that would be fine. You could do Hatmana with these items going into Shabbos. These material items themselves, because they're raw material, so they're muksa. Now, as I already explained to you back in the third perek, even by raw materials, what we call muksa machmas gufa, even with raw materials themselves, I could designate them for Shabbos. So in other words, if I want this rock for Shabbos, whatever reason, I want to use this rock for Shabbos, a paperweight, right? I want to put a rock on everybody's setting so that the napkin doesn't fly away. So in other words, what I could do is I could say to this rock, well, I'm not going to talk to the rock, I've done worse before, but I could basically be miyached. In other words, I could turn to the rock and say to the rock, you, I'm expressly designated for the purpose of Shabbos, and now this rock is not muksa because it was set aside for Shabbos. Good. So now, these, huh?
It's a joke.
Oh, okay.
Just don't beat it.
Right, also. Correct. Yeah, really right. So, and furthermore, we could be talking, in other words, in our discussion over here, when we're insulating the pot of food with these materials, so basically it'd be the same story, meaning that as long as I say that I want to use these raw materials on Shabbos, so it would be fine, it would be acceptable. The Gemara's question over here is basically as follows. Now, to appreciate this question, let's talk about the muchin. Now, these muchin, as I mentioned back in the Mishnah, it's basically they're soft materials. It's cotton. It's Rashi gives examples. It's cotton. It's tufts of wool. It's clothing that got worn out. All right, but let's talk about a nice soft cotton. Now, cotton is not cheap. Cotton is kind of like an expensive material. And so now the Gemara is basically wondering out loud, when I use my muchen as my item that I made hatmana with, so does it automatically not become muksa? This is going to be the Gemara's question. Can I move these tufts of cotton on Shabbos? So Amalei v'chimim neshein lo kupa shel tevin omed u'makbid, omed u'mafkir kupa shel muchin. And the answer comes back in the form of a rhetorical answer. Look, tevin, straw, is really cheap. Meaning that given that I want to do Hatzmanav going into Shabbos, and given that I can only use something which is not going to add heat, so I am going to be frugal, as we really all should be frugal, meaning not being cheap, but just simply being frugal. I want to use a material that's not going to cost me a lot of money. Straw is the best idea. because straw is something which preserves heat, it doesn't add heat, and it's really cheap. So really, the best thing to use would be straw. Okay? It happens to be right now, I'm looking around, it's Erev Shabbos, you know how everyone's running around, okay, going a little crazy, and I can't get my hands on any straw. So what do? Okay, in the absence of straw, so now you're going to take these this mochin. But it's really not my best. In other words, I'd really prefer not to. That's an expensive material. So essentially, the answer comes back in the following form. Look, right now I don't have tevin. I would have much preferred to use tevin because it's cheap, and it'll preserve the heat of my food. I don't have it right now, and so now I'm stuck. And so now I'm going to use mochin. But I'm going to use mochin right now, not because I really want it to be my insulator. It's not my first choice. Well, not even my second choice. But right now, necessity. Necessity becomes the mother of invention. So I'm only using it now out of necessity. But it still has the status of mochin. In other words, to put it simply, it's still muksa. Even though I ended up using it on Shabbos, but it's still muksa because it really wasn't my first choice. I only used it because I had no other choice because I had nothing else to use. Leima misayel, the Gemara is going to quote a brisa, which seems to be a wonderful support for this idea. Tomnim begizei tzemer, I could do atmana using tufts of wool, sipei tzemer, uvashon shargaman, strips of wool that was dyed purple, uvamuchin, ve'ein metaltalin osan. But because these items are expensive items, they're big ticket items, and even though I could do hatmana with these items, but I cannot move the items, meaning the items are hatmana. Sorry. The items are muksa. Okay, so from the Bryce, it seems very clear that this is in fact exactly so. So imi shumhalo ir, the Gemara says if the Bryce is really your only proof, it's not enough of a proof. Hachi kamar. Because the way we can understand the Bryce is im lo taman bahen ein metaltan osan. Meaning generically they are muksa. But if I use them, they're not muksa. Meaning that you read the Bryce, don't read the Bryce as one long sentence. But in other words, divide the Bryce into two sections. Generally, they are muksa. That's the second segment of the Bryce, ein metaltan osan. But if I used it for my hatmana, then it loses its muksa status. The Gemara says, well, if that's the way you're interpreting the Bryce, so then the Bryce is coming out not really saying anything. Meaning, where's the chiddush? So, the Gemara says, well, look, in other words, I'm tired. It's getting late. Maybe I would have thought that these tufts of wool and these tufts of cotton can be used as an item to lie down on, and therefore it's not muksa. The chiddush is no, they are muksa. They're expensive items. They're big ticket items, and therefore they are going to be muksa, even though they could serve some sort of functional use for me. But because they're so expensive, and because I won't use them, so generically they are muksa. Unless going into Shabbos, I use them as my item of hatmana.
Is this
considered muksa? Yeah, so, right. Good question. In other words, if we're going to put this under a category of muksa, what category do we put it under? So from the Gemara, we do not know, because the Gemara does not tell us what category of muksa it is. From Rashi, it would seem like it's muksa machmas chisaron kis. The Rashi that I would point to would be the Rashi of Omeid Umafkir Lakach. Kupash Omuchin Shedameha Yikarin, Rashi writes. They're really expensive. Ein Derech Beklach Velo Batli Lahatmana. And because they're so expensive, so therefore they can't be.
But the virtue of the fact that you're willing to take something that's considered expensive and use it for this purpose, you're making a statement. You're saying this is not that expensive.
Essentially, I mean, that's essentially the Gemara's question. That is exactly the Gemara's question. The Gemara wants to know, I'm taking a big ticket item, and before Shabbos, I'm saying, look, I need to use them. So now, does that remove this from the status of muksa? That's essentially what the Gemara's asking. To which the Gemara gives not a straight answer. Meaning, the Gemara quoted the Braisa. The Braisa seems to support this, that it's muksa, even though I used it. And then the Gemara deflects, and the Gemara says, well, the Braisa is not necessarily a proof. Okay. Now, I told you there are a couple of tangents. Here comes another tangent of the Gemara. Stuffing a pillow on Shabbos. Okay? My pillow gets unstuffed. So, I'd like to stuff it again, right? All the feathers come out, all the cotton comes out, whatever I stuffed it with, and now I'd like to restuff my pillow on Shabbos. So Rav Chisda says no problem. In fact, the opening of this discussion is it's fine. Rav Chisda Sharei LaAdurei Udra. Rav Chisda permits the returning of the pillows or the stuffing LeBeisaja B'Shabasa into the pillowcase on Shabbos. Okay, good. It's great to start off a discussion with the conclusion. The conclusion is it's fine. Now we have a brisa. Now the first two parts of the brisa is opening up a collar on Shabbos. When you give your shirts to the dry cleaner, so you know how it comes back to you. So they put something around the collar, and some places do this, not every place. Don't ask me. You know, we're never happy with the dry cleaner, so I'm not going to recommend anything. But what some places do is they tie up the front of the collar. So that's not a new minug. The Gemara here is describing. That's what they used to do back in the good old days as well. So to untie the tie that was made by the dry cleaner on Shabbos is fine. That's mutter. I know sometimes they staple a tag to the button. And so the question that you get often is, can you rip that off? Presumably that would be okay as well. So, but to untie the collar that you get back from the dry cleaner, that would be fine. If, however, let's say it's an article of clothing where they never opened up an opening for the head, so that you cannot do on Shabbos for obvious reasons, because now you're making it into a article of clothing. Right, that obviously you cannot do. That's the ein poskin. You can't open up the opening of the collar of the shirt on Shabbos. And then the Braisa talks about stuffing your pillow, and the Braisa says you can't stuff your pillow on Shabbos. Okay, obviously, this serves as a problem for Rav Chisda. So lo kasha, the Gemara says, not a problem. The Gemara says, look, it's very simple. If the pillow has already been stuffed, and then after the pillow fight, when all the pillows came out, now you want to restuff it, that's fine. Because there you're not creating anything. All you're doing is taking the stuffing that already came out of the pillow and you're putting it back in. But to make a pillow for the first time on Shabbos, that's aser. Because now you're making a kli, and that's where the brisa comes in. Tanya Namihach in the Gemara says, and this is a correct interpretation, and this is right. I'm going to show you a brisa that supports this as well. Nashru, if the pillow has already been made and it simply just fell out, the stuffing fell out, you're allowed to do so on Shabbos, and it goes without saying you're allowed to do this on Yontav as well. Good. Amrav Yuramarava, Posech Beis Tzavar B'Shabbos Chayav Chatas. You have your shirt, okay? It's not really a shirt, whatever, it's an article of clothing. And you want to make it into a shirt, and what do? You open up the an opening for the head, so your head can pop in. Kind of looks like this big toga. And you're opening up the opening for the head. For the first time on Shabbos, you're chai v'karben chatas, meaning that is a bona fide malacha. And why? Because makeh bepatish. And that's exactly the words that Rashi uses. Because prior to you opening up the opening for the head, it wasn't a functional shirt. Now it is a functional shirt. Okay, so...
Can you help me understand? Does this mean it just starts together? It's stuck together?
No. It means that it literally is just one big fabric. Uh-huh. And what I did is with a pair of scissors or with my hands, I cut open the opening for the head.
You tore it.
Yeah, I tore it on Shabbos. So Maskev LaRav Kahana. So Rav Kahana says, Ma Beizel Magufas Chavis. Now, we're going to learn together later on that if I have a barrel and the barrel was sealed up with some sort of covering on the top, and the covering was sealed to the barrel, so what you're allowed to do on Shabbos is you're allowed to break open that seal. Okay? And so what the Gemara now wants to know is, what's the difference? And Rashi points out that this we're going to see together much later on in the Masechta, Daf Kuf Mem Vav. Maybe Adam Chavitz umatiz es rosha b'sayif. So with a sword, I know that sounds a little excessive, but with a sword, what you can do is you can go ahead and you can break open the top of the barrel. And so what's the difference? Ask Gemara. Amalei Rav, zeh chibur v'zein chibur. So the Gemara says the difference is very simple. When it comes to the barrel, what I put over the top of the barrel is not an organic part of the barrel, but it was a seal that was put on in order to seal the barrel. But what I'm doing now is I'm just simply separating two items, which really, the truth of the matter is, were never connected. As opposed to the shirt is one whole organic material, and now what I'm doing is I'm opening up for the neck so that my head can go in. So that's makeh bepatish. That's finishing the product on Shabbos.
It's not compared to Nola, since it wasn't a shirt and you're actually making it a shirt.
Yeah, I mean, makeh bepatish, meaning I'm finishing the item. Correct. So Ramalei Rav Yirmalei Rabbi Zera Tanan. So now a question from the following: Shlal Shal Kovsin Shal Shal Shamaftechos VeHabeged Shuhu Tafor BeKalayim Chibul Tuma Ad Shiyascha LaHatir. I have when the launderer puts the clothing in the wash, so that as to not lose track of who belongs to whom. So what the launderer does is he kind of makes some loose stitching between two articles of clothing. Right? He's going to untie it, but right now, just to keep it together, he's going to stitch the clothing together. Or a chain used to keep keys together. What do we call that here? It's called the keychain. Okay. And a baggage you would tougher to climb, or garments that are temporarily stitched together. In other words, it's a wool baggage stitched together with linen strings, which, again, I plan to untie. So the common denominator between all these cases over here that are mentioned in this Bryce, that's a Mishnah Uktzin, is that these are things that are temporarily stitched. As long as they're currently stitched, they're considered connected. And consequently, one item becomes Tame, the other item becomes Tame as well. At its current state, even though I plan on untying it, it's currently connected. Ama. And so what you see over here is that they are connected. Even though currently I'm not actually washing it, but right now though stitching is considered a connection. Okay? That is what we get from the Mishnah in Uktzin. Urim Minhu. And now we jump to Mishnayos in Kalim. Malkos Asiyad Lekordam. Okay, I have a handle. And right now, I have my axe, but my axe is missing a handle. So, I'm going to take this stick, right? The stick wasn't really meant for the axe. But right now, again, necessity becomes the mother of invention. And so right now, I'm going to stick the axe on the metal axe onto the wooden handle. And chibur l'tumah b'shas malacha. So the Mishnah Kalim says, as long as I'm working the axe. So now the axe and the handle are considered one entity. But over here, however, in this Mishnah in Kalim, they're connected while you're working. Once I put it down, it's considered now halachically no longer connected, even though they're physically connected. B'shas malachin shalom, b'shas malachalom. Now, so again, now we're off on a little bit of a tangent, meaning a Mishnah in Uktzin versus a Mishnah in Kalim. The Mishnah in Uktzin says that when I temporarily stitch things together or connect things together, they are connected as long as they're physically connected, even though right now I'm not, quote-unquote, working it. Meanwhile, the Mishnah in Kalim says that when I take two things and I connect them together, which I plan on disassembling, so they are connected, not when they're physically connected, but when I'm actually working it. Okay? So it's the two Mishnayos do not seem to be in agreement with one another. Amalei. Now this is Rav Yirmi's question to Rabbi Zera, so this is, I'm assuming, Rabbi Zera's answer. Amalei hasam shlo b'shas malacha adam asu lezor kol b'na itzim. Hach shlo b'shas malacha naminichalei di imitanfei hader mechaver lehu. The difference is as follows. In the case of the makeshift handle and axe, truth of the matter is that it's temporary and I totally plan on disassembling it. In fact, I'm so planning on disassembling it that once I finish chopping whatever I'm chopping, at that point, even though they're physically together, like it's done. It's over. The connection is over, even though they're physically connected. As opposed to the stitching for the laundromat, where there, even after I finish cleaning the clothing, in other words, I'm going to unstitch it, but if either one of them become dirty again, or both of them become dirty again, I like that stitching there. In other words, that stitching may have use for me even after I finish cleaning it.
The intent of the launderer was to keep it together.
Right. Right. And right. And the intent is to keep it together. So in other words, so it's going to be considered a connection even though I'm not currently laundering them. Okay, that is one way to resolve the discrepancy between the Mishnah and Uksa and the Mishnah and Kalin. So in various yeshivas, this conversation, this discussion took place. In Surah, it just went the way we learned it. In Pumpadisa, it was learned a little bit differently. But a similar type of discussion. Who taught, who was the Baal Memra in Pumpadisa? So some have it as Rav Kahana, some have it as Rava, but either way. This is how the conversation went in Pumbedisa. Mantana milsadam rabbanu kol mechubar lo hareu kamahu. A connection is considered like they're one and the same, even though they are going to become disassembled. Am Rabbi Yehuda, Amarav Rabbi Meiri. So the Gemara quotes, this author of this opinion is Rabbi Meir, did not. We learn yet another Mishnah in Kalim. Second Mishnah of Kalim today. Beis hapach ubeis hatavlin. Ubeis haner shebekira mitamen bemaga ve'ein mitamen be'aver. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Okay, again, it's so much better if we just had a picture of this. And so, what I'm going to try to do now is describe it and give you a visual picture based on me describing it. Okay, who knows if I can do a good job? On these newfangled grills in the back, so they have kind of like a burner on the side, right? Not really a terribly good description, but basically on their kira, on their ovens. So what they had is they kind of like had like a little attachment on the side. They would put a kettle over there, or any food for that matter. And what happened is that the kira, obviously, which was generating so much heat, would also heat the kira on the side. It was like a warmer, okay, kind of like the food warmers we have in our oven. Not really a good way to describe it. Okay, not sure I did a good way.
Sidebar.
So right now, this item that was on the side is detachable. Okay, that's the important part of this whole discussion. So in other words, it's currently attached, but it's easily detachable. So the aim of time and the Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says like this: if the kira becomes tame, this detachable side grill, if you will, is also going to become tame. Mitamen b'maga ve'in mitamen ba'avir. But awkwardly enough, if let's say, in other words, and remember, the ovens were made out of earthenware, it's kli cheres, you know the rules, when I take a source of tuma, a sheretz or any source of tuma, and I put it into the airspace of the kira becomes tame. And oddly enough, this little side gadget that's placed on the side of the kira, that's currently connected, if the kira becomes tame through tumas avir, so the side thing doesn't become tame. And so now it is inconsistent. It's terribly inconsistent. Meaning that if the kira becomes tame through tumas maga, so the side guy, right? Very, very great description of it. Mm-hmm. So the side guy becomes tame, but if it comes tame through tumas avir, the side guy does not become tame. Now, there's no reason why we'd make any type of distinction between how the kira becomes tame. Stay tuned, as we're going to explain that in just a moment. Rabbi Shimon Matar, and Rabbi Shimon says, no, it's tahor. Now, so, look, Rabbi Shimon's position is really easy. Because it's detachable, just because I connected it currently to the kira doesn't mean it's connected. It easily comes off the kira. It's not attached, even while it's physically attached. And so, therefore, it doesn't become tame, even though the kira does become tame. Good. And we all know, we're all aware of the fact that just because the kira becomes tame, a tame kli is not going to be metame another kli. So from Rabbi Shimon's standpoint, the explanation is very simple. Because it's detachable, they are two separate entities. Good. Ramer is of the opinion that as long as it's connected, it's now one entity. Now, Bishlam le Rabbi Shimon kasev alav kikira damo, so the Gemara makes exactly that point. I understand Rabbi Shimon, he's easy. El Rabbi Meir, kikira dami afila babi nami letame, and he lav kikira dami afila b'maga nami letame. But the problem is really for Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir says that as long as it's connected, it's one entity. If that's true, what difference does it make how the kira becomes tame? Tumas maga, tumas avir, it really shouldn't make a difference. La'olam av kikira dami. The Gemara offers the following explanation. Well, maybe fundamentally Rav Meir agrees with Rabbi Shimon. It's not really a connection because it's detachable. V'rabbanu de'gazer b'hu. And this is a gzeira de'rabbanan. Now, so good. So, and we've seen this time and again. In the world of Tumah, when we have a Tumah that is as a result of a gzeira de'rabbanan, so what the rabbis do is they put in strange halachas into the Tumah. Why do they do that? The Gemara is about to explain, as we have already seen earlier. Because if something is only Tumah midrabanan and it touches Truma, the Truma is Tameh, but you don't burn the Truma. You don't destroy the Truma. The only time you destroy Truma, you burn Truma, is only if it becomes Tumah with Tumah d'Araisa, not with Tumah d'Rabbanan. Because this detachable sidebar of the oven is only Tameh midrabanan. So what the rabbis wanted to do is give like a tip off to everybody that's only Tumah midrabanan, Tumah d'Araisa. What's the tip? The tip is that if the oven becomes Tameh through Maga, then the Tumah extends to the side grill. If it becomes Tameh with Tumas Avir, so then the side guy does not become Tummy, and that is basically a way of broadcasting. This is only Tumah d'Rabbanan, not Tumah d'Araisa. Okay, so again, we just went off, we digressed, meaning that this entire Amud was almost an entire Amud of digression in terms of what happens when things are temporarily attached to one another. We saw that in the form of the lid over the barrel. We saw that in the discussion of the Mishnah Uksin, when we had the handle of the axe, it's not the real handle for the axe, it just happens to be a stick that right now I'm using for a handle for an axe. We saw that together in the Mishnah in Kalim, in the 20th Perek, the handle for the axe was the Mishnah in Kalim, I apologize. The stitching of the launderer, that was the Mishnah in Uksin, and we saw it once again in the Mishnah in Kalim in the 5th Perek, which talks about the attachment onto the side of the oven, which is debated whether that is or that is not a connection. But the common denominator of all these discussions is, how do we view a temporary connection? As connected or as not connected? Essentially, depends. Meaning, you cannot give one basic rule to all these cases. These cases are different than one another. Okay, that's essentially what came out from the Gemara over here. Okay, we'll stop over here. A little bit more digression, and then we come back tomorrow with the topic of Hatmana.